ॐ पत्रं करणेऽपि शृणुयाम देवाः पत्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यचत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूपिः हिषेम देवहितं यतायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः One verse 8, Saptapranaha. Saptapranaha prabhavanti tasmat. Saptapranaha prabhavanti tasmat. Saptarshishasamida saptahomaha. Saptarchishas samitas saptaho maha. Sapta ime loka yeshu charanti pranaha. Sapta ime loka yeshu charanti pranaha. Guhashaya nihita sapta sapta. Guhashaya nihita sapta sapta. Sandhi. Sapta pranaha prabhavanti. Tasmat Sapta Archishaha Samidaha Sapta Homaha Sapta Ime Glokaha Yeshu Charanti Pranaha Guha Guhashaya Guhashaya Guhashayaha Nihitaha Sapta Sapta. Sapta, nominative singular, just Sapta, no endings from Saptan. Sapta, nominative singular. Plural, I mean, nominative plural, Sapta. Seven is always plural, there's no singular for seven, right? Three or more. So, Sapta Pranaha, the seven pranas, the pranas here. Let me just do this first sentence. Sapta pranaha prabhavanti tasmat. The seven pranas are born, come forth from him, from the purusha, from that tasmat, from him. So the seven pranas come forth from him. The seven pranas are what we call the golakas, the physical eyes. So they're for the golakas, the apertures for the actual subtle sense organs. So the physical eyes, that's two. The physical ears, that's two, that's four. The nostrils, that's two. And the sense of taste in the tongue, that's seven. So they're looking at your physical body and looking at how many golakas, how many apertures there are for the five sense organs. And so actually the sense of sight can come from the right eye or through the left eye, like if I go like that or like that. So these apertures, there's two. Right, but the sense of sight uses these two. The sense of hearing uses these two, both ears, physical ears, and then the sense of smell uses both nostrils. Sense of taste uses the tongue. So these are the seven physical organs called golakas, the physical organs, which the subtle vrittis, the subtle activities of the sense organs use. So here, the first sentence: these seven apertures. For the sense organs, the physical sense organs, right? They come from him, from the Purusha. They're born from the Purusha. The Purusha is the one who's Divya, pure Chaitanya, Amurtaha, without any form, unborn, just pure consciousness, Brahman. Purusha is Brahman, the Brahman which is Atma. So from Brahman, from the Purusha, all of these physical sense organs have come. Then he says, not only that, Sapta Archishaha, the seven flames. The seven flames are the vrittis, the consciousness. So the sense of sight from the subtle body, the sense of sight, the sense of hearing. So from the Sukshma Sharira, right, the five indriyas themselves are subtle. So the five indriyas using these physical eyes come forward. Okay, so those are the flames. The flames represent consciousness. Consciousness in the form of sight, consciousness in the form of hearing, etc. So from the Purusha, these seven Golokas are born. Then the seven flames. Then Samiddha. Samiddha means the fuel. The fuel for the flames. The fuel for the flames are the sense objects, right? So the fuel for the sense of sight that comes through these physical eyes are the form and color, right? The fuel for the hearing that comes the sense of hearing that comes through these physical ears, sound. So the five sense objects, right? Sound, touch, being able to feel things, that's a sense object. Anything that you can touch, that you can feel, comes through the sense of touch, right? Anything that you can see, form, that you can taste, that you can smell, these are the five sense objects. So these five sense objects are the fuel, you know, which allows these fires to burn. Okay, so now, the next one, though, is Saptahomaha. The seven rituals, the seven offerings. The sense objects, which are the fuel for the sense of sight, for the five sense organs, become, when they're offered into the sense organs, become the offering really to the Atma. Right? They're an offering to consciousness. Because as soon as the sense organ hits the fuel, the sense object, that sense object becomes known. And so it's an offering to the self. I think it's really beautiful, right? So it's so poetic, you know. So now from this part, from the verses before, this whole creation, the whole manifestation from these several verses before has come from the Purusha. Now they're looking at what's going on with the individual being in terms of this, how knowledge works. Right, so there's the five sense organs which gain knowledge, and those knowledge are offered to the self. Right, so this whole thing, this whole trinity of knower, knowing, known, right? All of which is manifest when those offerings are made. That what is the offering? That particular perception is now known. Right? So that's the homa. That's the offering. Right. So all of this knower, knowing, known is something also born from the Purusha. Born from Brahman, okay. So also part of Ishvara. Sapta ime lokaha. These seven lokas means these seven worlds of experience. The worlds of experience, and by seven, it's not there's only five sense organs, but then there's seven apertures, right? So for this eye, I can have a world of experience. For this eye, I can have a world of experience. For either ear. So it's not that there's seven, but there's seven apertures from which these sense organs can flow, each one giving a world of experience. So these seven worlds of experience, sapta ime lokaha, these seven worlds of experience in whom the pranas charanti move. The pranas means the sense organs move. Now, what do they mean? My sense organ, my sense of eyes, using these physical eyes, you know, moves within the world of forms, of color. That's its world. My sense of hearing, using these physical ears, moves within the sense of sound, within the shabda sound. Okay? That's its world. So, sense of touch, its world is anything that I can feel. It's really interesting. Think of if you think of a blind person, right, their world, like say like Helen Keller or somebody, their world is through the sense of touch. That's their world. That's where the sense of touch is moving in that world, in the felt world. The ears are moving in the world of sound. The sense organs are moving in the world of the eyes, in the world of sight. That your sense of taste is moving within the world of what can be tasted. Right, smell, the same thing. These sense organs are moving in that world. That's provided to it through these golokas. Golokas means these apertures, these physical organs. So these seven worlds in which the are those in which these pranas, these sense organs, are moving. These pranas which guhashayaha, these pranas which come to rest, to sleep. Shaya means to sleep. Guhashaya means to sleep in the hridaya, in the buddhi, when one goes to sleep at night. All of these pranas, these sense organs that are now, when they're awake, they're operating in these separate seven worlds, the worlds that match their field. Seeing, sight, etc. Seeing, form, etc. Ears, sound, etc. So these come to rest. They come to sleep in the hridaya, in the buddhi, or just in the physical body. Shankara says either way. They in deep sleep, they come to sleep in this physical body. Okay. So all of these pranas, then nihitaha, this last word, nihitaha sapta sapta, each of these pranas, each of these sense organs, have been placed in a sevenfold way. The eyes have been placed in that world of sight and sound, sight and seeing and form. The ears have been placed in this world of hearing and sound. The sense of touch has been placed in this world, the sense of touch and object. All of these have been placed, right, in here. By whom? By Ishvara. The whole thing is born of Ishvara and placed in the body and placed in the world in this way. So being placed in the world in this way, these pranas manifest and go into unmanifest condition. It's kind of interesting also, Swamiji elaborates on this a little bit. For us, our sense organs and mind, really these are our... the mind and the sense organs are our instruments of knowledge, right? And these instruments of knowledge function when we are awake, right? The sense organs especially, the sense organs function when we're awake. When we're awake and the mind is, when we're, the sense organs are asleep, the mind is still awake, we have dream, right? But when both the sense organs and the mind are asleep, at that time there is no perception going on at all. And so for us as an individual, the world of experience comes and it goes. It manifests and it goes into unmanifest condition. Our individual world of experience comes into manifestation and goes out of manifestation. Not the objective world, but our experience of the world. You see what I mean? Like, it's a very simple thing, but it's profound. If my eyes are open, like now, and my mind is using my eyes, this world now is being offered to the Atma. It's manifest in terms of my vritti, the thought modification. It is now manifest. It's an offering to the self, right? It's manifest. It's known. Because my eyes are open and my mind is using my eyes. It's the same with my ears. If my ears are open and my mind is using the ears, then the world of sound is manifest. But if my mind is even daydreaming, it's daydreaming, at that time the world of the sense organs are not manifest for me. This world that is manifest for somebody else or manifest for Ishvara is not in the realm of my experience. From my experience, I need the mind and I need the sense organs. So I can withdraw the mind just in daydream or in dream, the mind is withdrawn, or just in imagination, or if I'm just lost in my thought, or if I'm thinking, right? Just lost in my own thoughts. I've now withdrawn my sense organs, I'm simply not using them. I'm only using my mind. And that's what then is manifest. But the mind can go into deep sleep at that time. Then there is no perception of the world from my perspective. I can also go into samadhi, into nirvikalpa samadhi, where the mind is only focused, right, on the Atma, on the self. At that time also, there's no experience of the world. And so even from what is true on an infinite level for Ishvara, when we look at the manifestation of the creation, where the whole creation is a manifestation of knowledge, Right? That's Ishvara, where the whole thing is known like an infinite mind. I, in a way, enjoy a little bit of Ishvara. Yeah? A little bit of what Ishvara enjoys, because Ishvara is the total Maya, I enjoy on a limited level. The relation, because the, if you look at the relationship of your mind and your sense organs, they're also projecting and going into unmanifest condition. They're projecting. When they're projecting, knowledge is there. Knowledge is there to be experienced. When they're in unmanifest condition, knowledge is not there to be experienced. They're guha shayaha. All of these pranas, all of these sense organs have gone into deep sleep. Right? They've all gone to sleep. They're residing in the body, they're asleep. And at that time, there is no knowledge taking place. Because what is true for you on a limited level, you know, like for instance, the use of your sense organs and mind, which are subtle, right? This is, okay, let me explain this. The physical body, together with the mind and sense organs, were not created by you. They're part of Ishvara. Right? They're not, but created by you, they're not part of your imagination. The difference is, for instance, if I see a rope on a snake on a rope, that's created by me. That's my projection. Then you won't be, you'll probably be seeing only the rope. You know, the dream is my projection, not yours. That's created by me. My imagination created by me. Right? But the one who imagines was not created by me. The capacity for imagination was not created by me. The eyes and sense organs were not created by me. The capacity of sight was not created by me. So this physical body, etc., the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, the whole thing, enjoys an objective reality. Right? And so you don't have overlordship. You are not the Ishvara. You as a jiva are not the Ishvara of this physical body. See what I'm saying? Because you can't make it come and go. Right? This physical body is part of an empirical reality, an objective reality. It is part and parcel of Ishvara. So, my mind and sense organs has the capacity of perceiving this creation through the use of the sense organs as it is. And that's where I'm using my sense organs and my mind to gain knowledge of the creation. I'm gaining knowledge. And what that means is that I'm using these sense organs to gain knowledge of what is, and I call it knowledge because what I'm gaining is true. The perception that I'm gaining of the creation is true to the creation. That's what we call knowledge, where there's a match. So the sense organs and mind are good for, which the sense organs and mind, which are part of Ishvara, they're part of creation, are good for gaining knowledge of the creation of which they're a part. See what I'm saying? So you're an individual within the creation, you're getting knowledge of objects within the creation. We call it knowledge because your sense organs and the vritti, the thought modification that they're getting, is true. Okay? Now, the same sense organs in mind can also project onto the creation what we call mithya jnanam, false knowledge, a false cognition. Right? Like I could see a snake for a rope, or a ghost for a post. It's a famous example. So, you know, you're walking along and in the distance is what is actually a post, and you mistake it for a ghost or a thief waiting to pounce. You know, that's a Shastric example that they use. That's a projection. Or if you looked at another projection that they use, if you look down the coastline and you see what is actually mother of pearl, shell, but it's shining as a piece of silver. And so you run after it thinking that there's a piece of silver there. But when you get there, it's only a seashell that has reflected the sun in a particular way. So there, the same mind and sense organs are very much capable of projection upon that creation. Okay? The knowledge, when the sense organ is working and not projecting, the knowledge of the creation is not going to be dismissed within relativity. In other words, when it'll be verified by my analysis. It will break down in a sense only from self knowledge when I realize the ultimate mityatva of it. But within with the ultimate non-reality of it. But then I would be recognizing the ultimate mityatva of the entire creation in total. But if the knowledge is happening properly, then upon analysis, this perception will be verified, not negated. Right? But if I see a snake on a rope, upon analysis, that projection will be negated. Right? But the mind still, you see that? Because I've mistaken it for a snake, a rope for a snake. There is no snake there. So that's my projection. If I analyze it, then I see that there's a rope. The projection goes away. The falsehood goes away. So now, this mind is part and parcel of the creation, right? And it can be used to know the creation, right? And it can also project upon the creation. And so I can have what we call jnanam, knowledge, from knowledge which is true to the creation, or I can just have cognitions which are mithyajnanam, false cognitions. Mind is capable of that also. Whatever it's capable of, the first point is this, that this body, mind, sense organs with the mind is part and parcel of the total creation, and through the sense perception, for me as an individual, through sense perception, what is manifest, knowledge becomes manifest to me through the mind. So knowledge becomes something which is known. This knowledge which becomes known to me through the sense organs and the mind is only known as long as the sense organs and mind are there. When the sense organs and mind are in unmanifest condition in deep sleep or in samadhi, this creation is not there to be experienced. So the experience of the creation is dependent on this. For me as a jiva, it's dependent upon the function of the mind and the sense organs. Without that, there is no subjective experience of the creation at all. It's not there, period. Everybody see how that is? It's just a fact, actually. So this function of the sense organs and the mind, which allows for the manifestation or the resolution of the creation, is what is true for Ishvara in total. For Ishvara, there is no limited being within the creation experiencing the creation. Ishvara is not a limited being within the creation experiencing the creation. And so Ishvara does not know the creation through the sense organs which produce a vritti in the mind. That's how the jiva knows the creation, through the sense organs which produce a thought modification in the mind. Ishvara does not have sense organs, right, to produce thought modifications in the mind. For Ishvara, the entire creation is an infinite mind. It's something which manifests it's like your mind manifests and is known. Whatever in your mind is known. Okay. Everybody see that? Whether what happens in my mind comes through sense perception, or what happens in my mind comes from an imagination, or what happens in my mind comes from memory or from dream, the one thing in common is that whatever happens in my mind is known. True or false, whether it's true or false, doesn't make any difference. If it is taking place in my mind, it is known. Because that's the nature of the mind. Mind is considered sattva. So it reflects consciousness. For Ishvara, whatever is happening in the creation is known. So the entire creation is pervaded by sattva. That's why we say this entire infinite creation manifestation is an infinite manifestation of knowledge. Just like for you, how you can relate to that to try to understand it. Whatever takes place in your mind, how that is known. Like that's why I sometimes say, imagine a meadow. If you imagine a meadow, the meadow is known. I say, imagine an apple. The apple is known. Just shut your eyes and watch your thoughts. The thoughts are known. The emotions are known. Whatever is manifest in the mind, I don't even have to say it like that. Whatever vritti is there in the mind, That is known. That's the very nature of the mind. Whatever, as long as it's awake, either in dream, or awake awake to the universe, through sense perception, or just awake through thought flow, it is known. And so we say, whatever is known, that is a manifestation of knowledge. Swamiji will talk like that. So I want to just try to make that use of language clear for you. Whatever is known in the mind is a manifestation of knowledge. It is known. Why do we say manifestation of knowledge? Because it's known. That's why it's known. Right? And it's a manifestation of knowledge either coming from your memory or coming from sense perception, or it's a manifestation of knowledge as a false cognition. It's called mithyajnanam. Whatever it is known. That experience for you is what the experience of Ishvara on the total, in terms of the total. So the infinite creation is an infinite manifestation of knowledge, of which your body, mind, sense organs, and everything that is not created is a part. And what else is a part? If the body, mind, sense, not a part, a part of. Okay? If the body, mind, sense organs are a part of that infinite manifestation, which we call Ishvara, then the functions of those parts are also Ishvara, right? And so if you say the Ishvara projects as the infinite creation, including all of the jivas, which was from the previous verse, all of the jivas are born from Ishvara, then the next thing that's being said here, not only are all the jivas born from Ishvara, but all of the functions of the jivas are born from Ishvara. So your sight is born from Ishvara. The sense objects that you see are born from Ishvara. The vrittis that occur from the sense organs seeing the sense objects, that is born from Ishvara. So not only is what we have to see is that not only am I a part of Ishvara, but everything that is going on with me as a jiva, the seer, seeing, seen, seer, seeing, seen is one unit. Hearer, hearing, heard is one unit. That's a loka. That's one field of experience. The touch, sense of touch, touching, touched. It's one entity. It's one loka, all of which are all born of Ishvara. So then he says, having said that, Atas samudra girayas ca sarve asmat syandate sindavas sarvarupaha atas jasarva oshadayo rasascha Yenaisha bhutais tishtate hyantaratma. Yenaisha bhutais tishtate hyantaratma. Ataha samudraha girayaha cha sarve asmat syandante sindavaha sarvarupaha. Ataha cha sarvaha oshadayaha rasaha cha yena eshaha bhutaihi tishtate hi antara atma. Ataha, from that purusha, samudraha, the oceans, girayascha sarve, and all of the mountains, the oceans, from that are the oceans and all of the mountains. Asmat, from that, syandante sindavaha sarvarupaha. From that flow all of the rivers in all of the many forms. So from the purusha are all of the oceans and all of the mountains. From that purusha, all of the rivers flow, all of the rivers in all of their forms. Atascha, and from that, all of these plants, oshadayaha, all of the herbs and plants, all of the foods, rasascha, and their essence, all of the juices of the vital force, the rasa, the juices of all of the, and the juices and the essence of all of the plants and their essence, by which this antara atma, esha antara atma, abides in the body, remains in the body, bhutahi. Bhutahi means with all of the elements, the five elements making up the body. But here, now, going from the individual, he's now going out. Remember, we've just been through all the pranas and all of the sense organs and all of the things that are offerings. Now he's saying all of these, so you can just imagine sitting there, that all of the oceans, all of the mountains, all of the rivers, everything that makes up Ishwara, right, and on the collective, on the whole, all of these things, then all of the things that you eat, all of the food and the rasa, all of these things, he says, all of these things are from the Purusha alone, are from Brahman alone. All of these things and all of this, the rest of the essence of the food, because of which, by which, the antara atma remains with the body. Remains with the antara atma is the atma, the self that is between the physical body and the atma, the sukshma sharira. That this the subtle body itself is indwelling this physical body. So the physical the subtle body indwells the physical body as long as the physical body is living. Right? The physical body is not nourished by food. Say the foods weren't there. You know, and the vital force that the food feeds to the physical body. This physical body would die. The sukshma sharira would not be allowed to stay here. Right? The subtle body is allowed to stay in this physical body because of the food. Because of the essence of the food. That's what nourishes the physical body that allows the subtle body to stay. All of these things, this universe itself, is only from the Purusha. All of the food is from the Purusha. All of the food that allows the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, to abide here. Right? So in other words, now, because now the antara atma, the one that abides in between, now the subtle body is being brought in. This entire creation is from the Purusha. Not only the creation, the mountains and the rivers, but all of the food that nourishes the physical body, that allows the subtle body to abide. Right? So if you remember from the last week, we've gone through about five verses that have been painting the picture of Ishwara, being all of the karmas, all of the rituals, all of the creation, all of the jivas, all of the devatas, right? All of the karmas, all of the disciplines, all even the shraddha, all of the Vedas, everything has been painted now as Ishwara. And all of the laws that allow you to function as a jiva here, even all of the vegetation that allows you to live, and the subtle body. So the whole thing is saying all of this, this entire creation, right? All of this comes from the Purusha. Tasmat prabhavanti. It's going to be important for the next verse. All of this is born from the Purusha. So now, remember that Shanaka had asked, you know, Angirasa, he asked, what is it knowing which all of this is as well known? What is it knowing which everything is as well known? That was the question. So now he's coming, and in this one chapter, he's answering, he's not going to answer this question, and he'll answer it in another way in the next chapter. Now he's answering it in this particular way. Right now, he's gotten this far. From this Purusha, which is free from form and pure consciousness, changeless, from this Purusha, this entire creation is born. Okay? So now, we see that this creation has one cause. But this creation could be born from the Purusha, like a son is born from his parents. The son is born from the mother. The son is born from the mother and then walks away, leaving the mother behind. Right? There's different types of birth. So how is this creation, in what way is this creation born from the Purusha? The Purusha, which is itself free from all form. So when we look at exactly who the Purusha is, the Purusha is pure, formless, infinite, changeless consciousness. So see this. The Purusha, Brahman, has no form, has no parts. It is non-objectifiable. It's aprameya. It's non-objectifiable. So it's just one pure, non-dual consciousness, which is changeless, ajaha. Amurtaha, ajaha, divyaha. Divya means consciousness. It is from this one changeless, infinite consciousness that this entire creation, and he's painted the whole picture of every, the creation, the jivas, the subtle bodies, everything. This whole creation is born from this. And so there's one statement several verses back saying, from this, with the avyakta, with the maya, right? So all of this is born from that, and it also said that from that avyakta, this purusha is paraha, means the very being of that avyakta. That avyakta, unmanifest maya, the purusha, which is the very being of that, the very self of that. So from this purusha, with that maya, this whole creation is born. The purusha itself, because it has no form, right, is beginningless and changeless, and it has no form. It has no boundaries, therefore. There's nothing there but itself. It has no capacity to give birth to anything, because it has no parts. And everything that does have parts, it gives birth to. It gives birth to the five subtle elements. It, space, air, fire, water, earth on a subtle level. It gives birth to the five physical elements. It gives birth to Hiranyagarbha, to the Virat, and everything else in it. It gives birth to time and space. So everything that has parts that could give birth to something, because it has parts where one thing can become or change into another, is what it gives birth to. So before it's given birth to that, it has no parts to give birth to anything. And so in fact, from the Purusha, nothing can come. Nothing can come. And so in this next verse, that's exactly what it says.
What's going on?
Purusha eva idam, Vishwam karma, tapo brahma pramritam, etad yo veda, nihitam guhayam, So vidya grantim, vikirati hasomya. Purushaha eva idam vishvam. Karma, tapaha, brahma, para amritam. Etat yaha veda, nihitam guhayam. Saha avidya grantim vikirati ihasomya. So everything changes here. He started by defining the Purusha as amurtaha, free from form, divyaha, ajaha, unborn, limitless. Then he says, from this Purusha, all of this has come. Now he says, Purusha eva idam vishwam. The Purusha alone is all of this. That Purusha from which all of this has been born, that Purusha is this. If the Purusha is this, idam vishwam means this universe. Idam this, vishwam, this universe. Purushaha idam vishwam eva. The Purusha indeed is this universe. So now, what type of a birth is it? It's the birth of satya mitya. It's the birth of the clay pot, right? If we could start by saying, this pot is born of clay. We can say that. This pot is born of clay. But really, there is only clay there. This pot, which is born of clay, is only clay. See? The pot is born of clay, so we make a differentiation because here we say, this universe that we're experiencing, here we are in this universe, we are experiencing it. Where did it come from? Where did it come from? Where did this universe come from? It was born of the Purusha. This universe was born of Brahman. This universe came from Brahman. See the language? This universe was born of Brahman. It was produced from Brahman. It came from Brahman. This pot was born of the clay. It's produced from the clay. Born of the clay. It came from the clay. This creation came from Brahman. It was born from Brahman. This creation, which was born from Brahman, is Brahman alone. Right? So you start out acknowledging the creation. We acknowledge it. Here it is, here it is, here it is. We acknowledge it because we experience it. I experience it through my sense organs. We acknowledge the dream. If you have a dream, you acknowledge it because you experience it. Right? So it's there. It must be acknowledged. And so here we are acknowledging it. But having acknowledged it, saying, yes, this entire creation has come from Brahman, then what is the relationship? We have to understand now, this entire creation that has come from Brahman, all right, what is the relationship then between Brahman and the creation that has come from it? You say, this creation that has come from Brahman, this creation is Brahman, right? The creation which has come from the Purusha is this Purusha. The pot that has come from the clay is the clay. There is nothing but clay there. This creation that has come from the Purusha is the Purusha. There's nothing here but the Purusha. That's the Advaita. That means the subject, the jiva, this body, mind, jiva means here now what I mean by the upadi, this body, mind, sense organs. It enjoys consciousness, right? This body is known. The sense organs are known, the mind is known, the vrittis are known, the whole thing enjoys consciousness. Right? But this is not the only thing that enjoys consciousness. This body is known, the space is known, the whole room is known, you are known, you are known, you are known. And if you all go from your own perspective, you are known, you the conscious being are known, your mind is known, your sense organs are known, your body is known, the space is known, I am known, the whole is known. There's nothing here that is not known. The knownness is the noun. Right? Consciousness is the noun. All of this, are all that we experience here, these are only apparent, they are attributes of consciousness in the same way that the pot is an attribute of the clay. It's an apparent as though attribute. This all is apparent as though attribute to consciousness. Who is the consciousness? The consciousness is me. But where does the me reside? Consciousness is me. I am consciousness. I'm not anything else. There's only consciousness. So I'm the conscious being. Where does the conscious me reside? It resides in the body. That's why we say pratyagatma resides in the body. Does it reside in the chair? Does it reside in the body more than it resides in the chair? It doesn't. I'll tell you why we think that it does. Why we think that it does is because you attribute the knownness of your being, consciousness, the knownness of your being, right, to be something which you are knowing through your sense organs and your mind. The knownness of your being is always being related to your knowing something, right? Like I'm knowing you. I'm knowing you. I'm knowing my thoughts. Right? So the knownness of my being is always taken to be performing an action of knowing. I'm always performing an action of knowing. And so, because I'm performing an action of knowing, and look how this works. If I use my mind and my sense organs to look over at this side, I am now performing, from the standpoint, it's true, from the standpoint of my sense organs and mind, the act of knowing, and that I'm turning my head this way, and I'm directing my eyes that way, and my mind is using my eyes, and so now I have the manifestation of this room. Right? So I'm producing that by directing my sense organs over here. But now if I direct the sense organs over here, I have a different manifestation of knowledge because my sense organs are directed in a different direction. And so I identify with my mind and my sense organs because as I direct my mind and my sense organs, the manifestation of knowledge changes. So that's just this obvious thing that I'm saying, right? And then if I close my eyes, for instance, and just watch my mind, the thoughts in my mind, my experiences are changing. So I consider all of that activity to be belong to me, the essence of it, of that, to belong to me, different from you, because your activity is different. So what I don't notice, because of this differing activity, your sense organs are different than mine. Your thoughts are different than mine. This body is different than your body. So all of this activity, subject-object activity, is different. As subject-object activity, I mean my mind using these sense organs seeing you. Your mind is using your sense organs seeing me. Right? So that's all different, differing and changing activity. But the differing, changing activity is taking place in something that is not changing. And that does not make any differentiation at all between subject and object. In other words, the conscious being that you are, your own presence, this me presence, right, is no more distant from the painting than from the space, than from the subject, the eyes that are seeing it. There's no distance anywhere from consciousness. There's distance from the body is distant from the wall. Right? My thoughts are separate from your thoughts. But there's no distance in terms of being, in terms of consciousness. But we take the consciousness, the me experience, to belong to this body. And you take it to belong to your body. When actually, that isn't the experience at all. The experience of me belongs to consciousness. That's where the confusion comes, because you take the experience of me to belong to the body, where the experience of me belongs to consciousness. So now, think of that for a minute. Think of it. The experience of me, my own self, it belongs to me, to consciousness. This body is in consciousness, the space is in consciousness, the wall is in consciousness. The experience of me belongs to the consciousness. So where is the consciousness located? Where am I located? You're located wherever the consciousness is. You are consciousness. That's what you are. You're not inert, but you're the conscious being. The experience of you, of yourself, your self-experience, is the conscious being. The physical body, the mind, the sense organs, and all of the sense perceptions are objects of consciousness. Right? They're objects of consciousness that come and go. But they're not away from consciousness. Right? And so what has to happen is that, say, and it's very useful just in meditation when you're just slowing everything down. One of the important things to do in meditation is to recognize where your sense of self resides. It does not reside in the body. It resides in the self. It doesn't reside in the thoughts that are coming and going. It resides in the self that's illumining those. So what makes you say, I am, I exist, I am a conscious being, I am me, you know? That you that you're talking about, that self-experience, resides in the subject that can't be objectified. That is the purusha. And so it's this purusha, this self, not the body, but this self from which the body has come, from which the space has come, from which the universe has come, right? That is yourself. That is the self of all of this. Now, when this Dehatma Buddhi is here, when this identification with the physical body is here so strongly, then you're always looking out from this standpoint across the room, right? Subject, object. But actually, if you slow down for a minute, this is not your experience. The subject object is your experience, but both the subject and object, the seer and the seen, the hearer and the heard, both are equally in consciousness. There's no subject. The object is as much in consciousness as is the subject. Now remember, what you take to be the subject is always really an object. You take to be you, the subject, your body, which is an object. So the body subject is in as consciousness as well as the painting object. Right? The subject sense organs are as much objects as the sense objects that the object sense organs are perceiving. We give this idea of being a subject to that which is an object. See what I mean? Your sense organs, you take to be the subject, and then what the sense organs perceive, you call the object. And Swamiji will say, yeah, the subject and the object, both are in awareness. Or he will say, I am both the subject and the object. Right? So who's the subject and who's the object? I am both the subject and the object. Means I am the conscious being. If we break it down, I am the conscious being, which is the truth of this body, the conscious being that is the truth of the sense organs, and the conscious being, which is the truth of the objects, which the sense organs illumine. So the subject, object, the seer, and the seen. If you think of a dream, the whole dream comes from you, and you're identified with a character in the dream. That character in the dream now is the subject. The subject, the character in the dream, is viewing the object, which could be the trees or the meadow or whatever. So the character in the dream is viewing the meadow, listening to the birds. So I will say, I am both the subject and the object. I am both the character in the dream and what the character in the dream is experiencing. I am not more than one than the other. I am not more the character in the dream than I am the birds that the dream character is hearing. See what I'm saying? Both of them, I am both. I am both the subject and the object. So in fact, I can say that really, there's only me there. That's all that's there, is me. I'm the very being, the very truth of it. This dream has come from me, the whole thing. I am all of the laws of the dream. I am all of the parts of the dream. I have all of the rituals of the dream. I am all of the karmas in the dream. I am all the sense organs in the dream. I am all the perceptions in the dream. I'm all the mountains in the dreams. I'm all the rivers in the dreams. I'm the whole dream. I'm everything in the dream. The whole thing has come from me. And in fact, the whole thing is me. Because it has no being apart from me. So I am this. There's nothing other than me here. I am the subject and I am the object. And in fact, I am the whole. That's all it is. As a jiva can say that about the dream, I have to be able to now say that about the universe. It's easy. It should be easy for you to say it about the dream. You need to be able to say it about the universe, because there isn't any difference, really. There's no difference, because this physical body is part of this universe. It's an object of awareness. It is part of this universe. Just like the dream character is part of the dream. Your subjective dream. Dream character is part of the dream. This body is part of the universe. Sense organs, objects. Objectifiable, part of the universe. The thoughts, part of the universe. Emotions, part of the universe. The ahankara, the I notion, part of the universe. It's all part of Ishwara. Just like in the dream, every part of that individual dream character is part of the dream. Every part of it, the ahankara, the moods, the emotions, the mind, the sense organs, the body, all of it is part of Ishwara, part of the dream Ishwara. How is it different here? It's exactly the same. This body, mind, sense organs, thoughts, moods, emotions, this entire creation and everything in it, everything that makes me a jiva and all of my act of knowledge and everything, that's what all of these verses have been about, all of it is part of the whole. And so, who is left? Who is left? The Atma, the Purusha, me, the conscious being. I am left. I am left as the consciousness, you know, from which all of this comes. But if we say, I am the consciousness from which all of this comes, then is this different than me? No, I am the consciousness, the Purusha, from which all of this comes, and this is myself alone. Right? Because it has no being. The existence that it enjoys, the knownness that it enjoys, the consciousness that it enjoys, the very stuff of it is me. So it has come from me, and now that you understand it has come from me, then what is its relationship with me? I am it. I am it alone. And so here he says, Purusha eva idam vishwam. The Purusha, the Atma, the Brahman, is this universe alone. All of the karma, all of the action, all of the rituals in this universe, this is the Purusha alone. All the tapas, all of the austerities and upasanas, all of that is just the Purusha alone. Brahma, the Vedas itself, just this Purusha alone. Etad yaha Veda, he who knows this, Paramritam, that limitless self, he who knows this, Paramritam, Nihitam Guhayam, which is here in the Guha, here in the Buddhi, he who knows this one, who is placed here in the Buddhi to be this, Paramrita, the one that is infinite and immortal, free from death. Saha avidya grantihi vikiriti iha somya. That person, saha, here itself, avidya grantim vikiriti. He destroys, he dissolves this knot. Granti, this knot of avidya. Here itself, he destroys this knot of ignorance. Right? Iha means here itself. Then he says, hey, Soumya, oh, beautiful one. He's talking to his student. Swamiji made a lot. I read Swamiji's commentary on this. Swamiji says, for this, hey, Soumya, oh, beautiful, you know, beautiful one. He said, that's better than saying, oh, you sinner. He doesn't say, oh, sinner. He says, oh, beautiful one, you know, means you are blessed. You are blessed, right? Because you are the Purusha. You are the self from which all of this, that's who you are. There's nothing more beautiful than you. There's nothing more beautiful than your being. Your being, you are the one from whom this whole has come. You are the whole. That's who you are. The one who sees this, who understands this, for that one, here itself, not later, here itself, this not of avidya, this darkness in the buddhi. For that one, this darkness, this ignorance in one's buddhi, this not knowing, you know, knowing that one, knowing which all else is known, right? For the one who understands that, for that person, that avidya, that not of avidya, is gone. What a vidya? The vidya that goes back to his question. What is the truth? What is it? What is it knowing which all of this is known? So he says, The one who knows this, that all of this, in fact, is the Purusha from whom all of this has come, that Purusha is all of this. The one who knows that, that one dissolves all of the knots of samsara. It's also often called Hridya Granthi, the knot of the heart. Instead of knot of the heart, it's the knot of avidya, that knot of ignorance, because ignorance is the problem. If you are the whole, there's nothing you can do to become the whole. It's not about becoming. It's not about doing. It's about knowing. It's about removing the ajnanam, the ignorance that has kept you bound to samsara. And it's an all-encompassing ignorance. Just, you have to think it's the other side of Maya. Just think for yourself, when you have a dream, say you have a lucid dream, you are the Ishwara of the dream. For you, there's no problem. You're the whole. And there's nothing that can, you are, the dream comes from you, you are the dream goes back into you, nothing happens to you, you're free, you are the whole, you're the infinite. There's nothing away from you. From the dream character, which is part and parcel of that Maya, and whose very being is the whole, the self, the consciousness, but from that, from the standpoint of that dream character looking around within that creation, all of the means of knowledge that the dream character has at his or her disposal are limited. That dream character is stuck within the box. The dream character has to beckon Ishwara and say, please God, if you're there, please tell me what is going on. What is the truth? Is there a truth? Because the dream character, the means of knowledge that dream character has within the dream, can only give that character knowledge of what's going on within the box. Now, any amount of science, and any amount of instrumentation can be built to understand the laws that are going on within. But who's going to tell that dream character that you are the whole? What means of knowledge? And so that's why the whole pramana, that whole teaching methodology, is considered a revealed knowledge. You're beckoning Ishwara, please tell me. And then that's why this teaching is considered beginningless. In this text itself, in all the Upanishads, you take it back to Ishwara. The tradition of teaching from the rishis. And you say, well, how do I know whether that's true? Well, because you have to experience that pramana. You have to experience it as a pramana to see for yourself whether or not that's true. It's like the person who's had bandages over his eyes. I can't see. Well, I don't know. I can't see. Well, you have to take your bandages off. Well, I don't know if I want. I don't know. Take your bandages off. Just take the bandage off. Well. The pramana has to be used. In order to understand, in order to gain the knowledge that a pramana has to give, the pramana has to be used. And then you have to see, does that pramana make you see something that bears fruit? Does it make you see something that bears fruit? That's how you can tell. You can't tell whether something's a pramana unless that pramana is being used. So here, this pramana is being used. Let's stop there. Let's just take a minute. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Guha is a synonym for buddhi?
It means cave.
It means
cave. But it's often used for buddhi, oh. The guha.
So they translate sometimes cave of the heart.
Yes.
Like
yeah. Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Each class gets clearer and clearer, you know? And then there's moments that it's so crystal clear, there's no thought, just crystal clear, it's mm-hmm. what it is. And then this habitual way of denying comes up.
Yeah, you'll see it, and then the ahankara finds a place to hide. That's the whole process. What I mean by that is, that's how knowledge takes place. First you see it, and then your mind will kind of just move like the wind until it hits a snag of something that's not quite clear. Then that becomes, in satsang, that becomes the question to ask. And then also in the unfoldment, that's the next, your mind's waiting for that thing to be unfolded, so that piece becomes clear. It's always like kind of a domino also. Something becomes clear, and then boom, 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 these other things become clear. Then something else becomes clear, then boom, 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 that knocks off a lot of other things.
Yeah, it's like using the same words, you know, but it's like, it becomes more like when you say, you know, the word has to land, you know.
Well, also it's interesting that, say, one thing is unfolded, and you hear it based upon what you have understood at the time. But then you understand something more. So now when that same thing is unfolded, it's coming into a mind that is providing much more of a context for that. And so even though, it's really peculiar, even though you understood it before, well, you didn't understand it improperly, but now you understand it better. Even though you understood it before, now you really understand it. But that keeps going on for some time because of its place in the context.
Carol, this thing, you know, tonight something sort of got cleared up a little bit, but it's something I've been sort of wondering about. Like when you say that Ishvara has total knowledge, you know? And then, so is it because everything is really Brahman. Is that why Ishvara has total knowledge? Because everything is known. Because known is like chit. Is that right? So then, for the individual, because like we're limited by the upadhi.
Mm-hmm.
But things are known because they're Brahman too. But we're, it's limited for us.
Yeah. Well, say for instance, if you just look in terms of your mind, the vritti, as being a manifestation of knowledge. Okay. Like if I get up a memory or whatever. Whatever's happening in the mind, it's known.
Okay.
It's manifest knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Does that word work for you, manifest knowledge?
Yeah, you
know, like, it, and I mean it very simply, like, if I use my sense organs and now my mind is seeing this room,
mm-hmm.
but the sense organs are allowing that vritti to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that vritti is a manifestation of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
If I ask you to remember what your house looks like, mm-hmm. from the memory, you're now having a manifestation of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it, that whole name and form and color, all of that is known, right? So now, you're not going to have a manifestation of knowledge without your mind, okay, for Jiva. Now, for Ishvara, the entire creation, because pervaded by sattva, is a manifestation of knowledge. But it's not a manifestation of limited knowledge, because you're a limited, limited mind, limited memory, limited sukshma sharira. And so the manifestation of knowledge that you're capable of, even in terms of gaining knowledge with your sense organs, is limited. Right? Because you're limited by time and space. Okay? But for Ishvara, the manifestation of knowledge is total, because there's no identification with a given part.
But what I'm sort of, you know, what I'm trying more to get to is trying to understand, you know, how it is that the jiva can recognize that everything is Brahman.
Okay, but Brahman is not a manifestation of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Brahman is the very consciousness itself. And so for Brahman, there's no big or small. Mm-hmm. It just is what it is. Mm-hmm. Without time, space, dimension, mm-hmm. it is just pure, simple being. Mm-hmm. So say there's no way of you knowing Brahman partially, because it has no parts. You know Brahman as yourself, or you don't. Mm-hmm. There's no kind of knowing it. You know, like you can kind of know an object, but any object or anything that in relativity, there's so many sides to it. It's mm-hmm. infinite. You can never really know anything.
But it only knows that all of this manifestation is myself.
Right. Why? Because, mm-hmm. first of all, you know yourself, which is non-objectifiable. Mm-hmm. Okay? And you know the nature of objects. The nature of objects or anything that exists within time and space has got to be mitya, because it comes into being. If it comes in just by that fact, if it comes into being, then it's subject to change. That means it's dependent on something for its being, because it can't come from non-existence.
So are you saying then Ishvara is like a gigantic... It's a large buddhi that just...
Infinite buddhi, but not like his sense organs and body.
Yeah, but you this know, is like, all just his mind then. Is that the
mm-hmm,
idea?
Yeah, infinite mind, like an infinite mind. So, in fact, in the mundaka that we had just a few verses ago, he even said that. Yeah. Mm.
So he doesn't have the sense organs, but he has a mind.
No sense organs, because that's why we'll say, it's kind of an upasana, where the vayu, the wind, is his prana. You know, the sun and the moon are his eyes. Like that. But it would be, let's look at it like this. If you have a dream, what are your sense organs? No. Because the whole thing is known. It's a total manifestation of knowledge. The jivas within the dream, they can only know through their mind and sense organs. But the dream itself doesn't have a mind and sense organs. You can't say the dream has a mind. You say that it is an infinite manifestation of knowledge, or an infinite mind, you could say. But it's not that there's a dream, and then that dream has a mind and a body. It's the whole thing is an infinite manifestation of knowledge, or an infinite mind, you could say. Like an infinite mind.
Are objects known because they're Brahman? I guess that's sort of what I'm trying to get
Oh,
to.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
The known experience.
Yeah.
Belongs to Brahman. If you take away the entire creation, all objects, all seer seen, everything, there's no duality. What is left is the knownness, of which is the nature of consciousness.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay, but now, the manifestation with Maya, creation manifests. The entire creation enjoys the knownness, which is Brahman. Okay? But now, here within the creation, so the whole creation, here you have the knownness of Brahman, and then the manifestation of knowledge, that whole manifestation is then known. Okay. Now within that manifestation, here's the jiva. The jiva is having experiences of manifest knowledge through the mind. And when the mind is there, right, then that mind is illumined by awareness, and so that manifestation of knowledge is known. So you have the whole manifestation of knowledge as Ishvara, and then all of the jivas within Ishvara are having their own limited manifestations of knowledge within the total manifestation of knowledge. But all of that is Ishwara.
I know, I guess I understand that, but somehow there's this, this jump I can't make, and I keep trying to figure out how to make it, where I understand that that everything is known because I'm Brahman. I mean, that, that thoughts and mind are known, they're illumined by Brahman and all this.
Well, the sense organs perform the, a function of
right.
seeing and of hearing,
right.
and the mind of gaining vrittis.
Right.
But what allows those vrittis to be known?
Brahman.
The consciousness that the vrittis enjoy,
mm-hmm.
the knownness that it, they enjoy, which we take to belong
mm-hmm.
to the vritti or to the object. Like I say, well, that that painting is known.
Yeah.
So the painting's giving me the knownness.
But see, that seems for me to somehow encapsulate, I know that Brahman isn't limited, but almost makes it as if the jiva can only know Brahman sort of not as the whole, but as something that illumines the mind.
Well, that's true in this way. Brahman, whether it's Ishwara, or Ishwara, the manifestation of the whole, or the jiva, Brahman is not objectifiable. It is its own experience. The experience that is you are Brahman, and the experience of Ishwara, that Brahman is exactly the same. So Ishwara's recognition of Brahman is no different than your recognition of Brahman. Because the recognition of Brahman is really the differentiation from yourself of what you are not. The self experience belongs to the self. It's not being given to you by the mind or the sense organs or the universe. The self that you are is its own self-evident experience. The problem is that the mind takes the self-evident me to be its own experience.
Trying to understand if there's any way to know I am the whole, other than just accepting it makes complete sense logically, all the logic support it, this is what the scriptures say, there can't really be any other way that it is, okay, it must be true. But I think that there's more than that. I mean, I think for Jnani, looking out, their experiences, this is all me. And I guess that's what I'm trying to understand.
It is your experience, but the experience is not maybe as... You may be looking for an experience rather than recognizing the experience that's already here.
Yeah.
What causes that person, what causes you not to recognize that, mm-hmm. that you're both the subject and the object,
mm-hmm.
is the Dehatma Buddhi.
Mm-hmm.
It's because...
that's so strong. You, the sense of me seems to be originating from the body.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to do a...
Well, that's why we do all of this Drisha Viveka, and all of these things are to try to help you to
that.
See that the body, the mind, the sense organs are as much a part of the universe
Does
that break the Dehatma Buddhi? I wonder.
There's two things that do.
Yeah.
That
uh-huh.
say in a meditation, for instance. In the meditation, if you recognize all of these things are objects, then you're just in your mind. You recognize this is an object. Your thoughts are an object, etc.
Mm-hmm.
In doing that objectification, then turning toward your own being, then you get to know yourself. The one that has been differentiated from all this. So then you know what you are like.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Separate and constant. Okay, then.
Mm-hmm.
Then now here comes back the world. Okay? But now you know who you are. Differentiated
mm-hmm.
from these things that you had once taken yourself to just be one with. Like the thoughts in your mind, your moods, your emotions, your body, etc. Now you know yourself. And you recognize that even in reference to this body, mind, sense organs, I am here as a constant. Okay, so now this constant, now you recognize, okay, am I, is my being contained? And then you think about it, is my being contained? And then you look out, and when you look out, just kind of relax your mind and let this body and mind and sense organs and all of your experience, you know, be part of the room. And then you say, am I contained? Is anything containing me? And then just let yourself relax and kind of focus on your own being. And then you realize there's nothing containing me at all. And so that's how you start to realize the changelessness of yourself. Now, there's more to it. Your being, the conscious being that you are, it's not big or small. Space has dimension, right? You don't have dimension. But dimension is not away from you. That's the illusion. That's why I can ask you to have an imagination. And you have dimension in the imagination. But the imagination is not away from you, but you don't have dimension. You are just pure me. And so now you have to recognize this pure non-dimensional me. I mean, it's not big, not small, it's just all that is in reality. This non-dimensional self is not away from anything that I experience. So you just have to walk around noticing that. Practice it. Because it's the truth. You just have to see it. You know, you have to see it.
It's like a steady state, kind of.
You're steady. Mm-hmm. Absolutely steady.
But Robert, in order to recognize that, then I objectify it against it.
No, you don't. You know why? Because consciousness is its own experience. It's not, it is known. If I got rid of the whole universe, I continue to be known. I'm my own light. And so that's why you think it's being objectified. It's not being objectified, it's you. There's nobody else illumining it. There's nobody else illumining you for you to be known.
That's just another thought again that's being known then at that moment.
The thoughts are being all being known. Yeah.
But at that moment, that's not a thought that's being known.
That's right.
Because it's still being illuminated.
That's right. And you are always the constant luminary. You are always constantly known. You're never not known. And there's nothing knowing you except yourself, because that's your very being, is consciousness. So consciousness is its own self-evident experience. Like, look, when you just think about this, when you meditate, how you shut everything down, you shut your eyes and we make it dark, relax the body, you know, do japa, whatever, to make everything go away, basically. Everything goes away except me. Then I'm just here, my own light, just as I am. Now my eyes are open. I still am just here as I am, and with all of these names and forms. But nobody's lighting me up. Think about it. When meditation is so good for this, when you just are there, you know, your eyes are closed and everything. What makes you known? Your self-experience. It's not the mind, because you light up the mind. So what lights up you? Nothing.
It is.
That's it. And that is Brahman. That is Brahman. That's the self of the whole creation.
Yeah, and I keep looking for an experience, a big experience of Brahman. Or something,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, instead of recognizing how big this experience, I mean, there's nothing more than this, than the ananda of your own self.
So I thought that meditation that you did last time was just beginning with the Dehavamoha Buddhi, and
yeah,
here I am in my body. Uh-huh. I'm just getting very familiar with the sense of me.
That's a very powerful meditation.
That's very powerful. Because then you start to sense, okay, then it's me, and then you sense the me is not the body per se, it's just me. Right? And then you just can start to see that me is always there.
Always. Right? You can never get rid of it.
You know what? Yeah. Even when you mistake it, and think you don't have it or think you need to reach it, it's still me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can never get rid of it, ever. You can't change it in any, even in the slightest way.
It's like you superimpose the body on it, then you also superimpose, you know, the lamp or the picture or whatever on it. Essentially.
Essentially, yeah. That's right. Everything.
Wow. That's really stretches the mind, doesn't it?
Not nicely stretches it. Yeah.
That's great. Can we start with this first next time? Or we
nope, we're moving on.
Will you put the thoughts on mine?
Your rights and those on.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. What a great Christmas present.
Yeah, here I am.